Hi there. My name is Katrina Van Huss. I am the founder of Turnkey for Good, and I'm so happy that you're with us today. Whether you're listening to us as a podcast or you found us on YouTube, ever how you're here, we're glad that you're here. Today, my guests are Nathan Chappelle, wave Nathan, Senior VP of Donor Search and co-founder of Fundraising AI and author of the book Generosity Crisis, which I highly recommend. Also with us from across the pond is Darren Winter. Darren is an AI ethics expert and a PhD candidate in AI ethics right now. Right now you're in Spain, but you reside in London. Is that correct, Darren?
That's true. Absolutely.
Okay. And you work with people all over the world, including Turnkey for Good, which is how we came to know you. So for this conversation, we're talking about AI, which is all over the news lately. It causes CEOs and organizations to assume that we know an awful lot about it. It's, what is it, the Dunning-Kruger effect? We are subject to it, assuming we know so much, and that assumption is really dangerous. We don't want to be left behind, so we jump in. We're eager for our organizations to use AI quickly, and sometimes we don't install the accountability from stakeholders and allow them to question or press pause. Doing so may put our missions at risk. So that, combined with the lack of direction and little to no structured training, there are risks. And that's what we're talking about today. What do we do about that? We've never been here before. And today, our guest will help us explore how we can identify, assess, and address the risk while still enjoying the benefits of AI. So let's jump in. So you guys are both experts at different things. Darren, you're leaning heavy into the ethics. Nathan, you have been on the front edge of AI for nonprofit since there was such a thing. Darren, I'm going to ask you first, where did we start? How did we get here in terms of data and our current use of it? What's the story?
AI goes back probably quite a long time ago. I mean, we're going back to before computers were invented. So I'll spare you the long history, but there were concepts of computers and chatbots over the last 100 years or so. But kind of, I suppose, really what kind of kicked things move forward was into the late 80s, just before the internet really sort of became the thing that we know it today, and more this kind of conversation between computers. So one computer talking to another computer, and then trying to find resources, which then brought the internet together. And then kind of, I suppose, the chatbot as we know it now. So when we kind of go into websites and we see these little pop-ups come up and can I help you? And these have gradually evolved over time to, you know, something like select from these three or four options about how we can help, all the way up to now we've got OpenAI's ChatGPT, which everybody's probably heard of, which has now evolved into personal assistance. Prior to 2020, it was talking about 2030 for AI and robots coming and taking over the world, whereas now it's here. It's actually here. Last year was a massive step forward with ChatGPT, and there's been much more talk now about jobs and that being threatened. And a lot of the AI, a lot of the technology companies have all kind of spurred this technology war to grab a hold of this like new marketplace.
So Nathan, if you could address like take Darren's story and then lay in the whole nonprofit experience on top of that. How did we come along?
So I think this is a lot of times an unpopular conversation to have. It is something that deeply concerns me as a nonprofit practitioner. So, I mean, we can look back at how things like this have played out in the past and in most recent history, you know, the advent of social media and how at the beginning, for all intents and purposes, was seen to be the convener of all conveners, the community builder of all community builders, and how we would be able to connect in new and deeper ways than ever before in history. And all we have to do is fast forward a very short number of years to say, okay, if there were, you know, this is a game where we're say AI versus humans, you know, we lost that first round. And, you know, all of the unintended consequences that we didn't really foresee have come true. So increases in anxiety, increases in depression, social isolation, you know, increases in teen suicide, all those things that we know to be true. Yet we're still here today. And so, you know, I look at this from the nonprofit sector in a couple different ways, because, you know, while I don't blame for-profit corporations for that are in the AI arms race that Darren was talking about. I don't blame them for prioritizing speed and scale over safety, because that is essentially how capitalistic markets work, right? I mean, you do work, you get rewarded for that work. And it truly, the arms race by nature has prioritized speed and scale over safety. Now, what's interesting, I think, about the nonprofit sector is that we don't have the same financial motivation. Our work is not rewarded by selling a product or service. It's about fostering and instilling trust. Where often the nonprofit sector lags in technology adoption. I actually believe that we have an opportunity and responsibility to lead in this discussion because we don't have the same financial incentive. Because the average person who's not following this is like, oh, I can sleep at night because so-and-so is being responsible and so-and-so is being responsible. And actually, in the case, deferring their own personal responsibility to someone else that has different financial interests. And so all that to say, pause, not to say don't use, right? I mean, because that's the last thing we want to say to the nonprofit sector, but we want to say, be thoughtful and measured in how we use AI to ensure that we don't lose the second battle, the social media battle. Like, this is right. the new age.
So to help people fully understand what we're talking about, Darren, give me two or three examples of AI in use in which a nonprofit constituent might interact and not know it.
On your laptop or on your device, you might see advertisements, and they could be on a website, it could be on your Google searches now. So ads is a very obvious one. Social media is probably another one. Chatbots I already mentioned. And I think that also just with your devices, with smartphones, with things like notifications, the timing of those, your email delivery, pretty much everything. When you start looking at it, and I've got no evidence to say this, but even the device is listening to you, in inverted commas, because that is always a hot topic. But just anything that you're using now has really got AI power there. Even if it's not physically on the device or that you'll see it in front of you, it will probably be somewhere in the chain. Okay. So even like the software we're using today, like Zoom, or you know, the podcast that you might be listening to, or YouTube, that will be using AI somewhere, because it will be understanding what you like. Say, for a good example is Netflix and Spotify, Apple Music, because they've been using AI for a long time, but we don't understand it's AI. We just understand it as machine learning, or perhaps like, you know, we switch it on, we like a comedy program. It's the software says to us, do you like it? And we give it a thumbs up and it says yes. That teaches the algorithm in that software to say, do you know what, we'll find more of these and we'll send it Katrina's way or send it to Bob's way, and it'll show you something different. The software can understand more about our behaviors and our intent to do things and its predictability. So from a social good and user point of view, there's a couple of examples there about kind of how AI is in our environment, but also more importantly, some of the dangers about if it's used for bad, you know, potentially like some of them from the fundraising perspective, that it could be used in a manipulative way.
Talk about that, Nathan. How could you manipulate me as a constituent using AI?
Geez, yeah, we could take a whole hour on that. You know, the reality. So actually, we'll take one step back, because, you know, and Darren's talking about is, you know, I mean, it's so spot on. We did a poll, in fact, yesterday, and it was so interesting because we found that 40% of nonprofit professionals are using AI, currently using AI. 15% are testing it. 44% are thinking about it. And so 1% don't want anything to do with it, which I give them like kudos for being honest. What's interesting though is like 38, so that 40% are using it compared to the private sector, it's about half, like, or actually less than half. And the private sector is probably over 87% are like people using AI in the private sector. So our sector is lagging for sure. Those that are using it, 38% are using it weekly, at least weekly. So that's, you know, there's some adoption there. But when we compare that, it was really interesting on this, when we compare the 40% that are using AI in their nonprofit work, only 81% said their organization does not have a usage or governance policy. So they're essentially using it behind their boss's back or their organization's back. So all that to say is, you know, I think a lot of people are using it, more people are using it, but they also don't know what they're using. And there's tremendous risk in that. So getting to that question of like, how can you manipulate, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, when we think about philanthropic psychology, a lot of, you know, giving or asking solicitation, you know, whether it's direct response or in person is built off age old psychological principles of like, you know, kind of, you know, presenting things in certain ways that that generate a response. AI essentially for the first time solves, you know, kind of these like long standing question. 2300 years ago, Aristotle literally said like the idea of giving is easy, but who to give and when to give and how much and for what purpose is actually hard. And if you can't solve for those things, you just don't give. And so like we fast forward 2300 years to a point in history today, it's the first time ever in history that, you know, machine learning and deep learning can actually solve for actually saying like this person is going to give in a certain period of time because they have all these markers. So like we have just a lot of ability to do that. My biggest concern when ChatGPT came out, and I was already a fan of large language models before ChatGPT came out, that I saw just this tremendous breakthrough in technology, is that idea of sounding authentic is not the same as being authentic. You can manipulate people by essentially harnessing all the data in real time, basically removing the individual and removing the person from the nonprofit, and then just basically creating like lots of transactions and generate transactions based on really solid psychological principles. I mean, large language models have read every book on psychology. They've read every book on philanthropic psychology. I actually took the program in the UK that the whatever it's called, the philanthropic psychology certificate program.
Oh yes, Jen Shang, yeah.
Yes, when I was taking that course, I actually had every test that I took, I put the same test into ChatGPT. It performed every single test better than I did as a human. Wow. And this is a application that's not trained to understand philanthropic psychology. It just has read a lot more than I have.
Sure.
It had the world's body of knowledge. So I think it's actually very easy to imagine a world that manipulates people because it's actually better than humans at understanding those conditions. And so I think, again, it's this moment where the nonprofit sector has to really take heed of what is important to us, not just in the short term. We can't evaluate AI based on like raising more money. We can't like in the short term. We have to evaluate AI based on how does this preserve and protect trust so that we have a thriving philanthropic sector in the future. We can't afford like the for-profit sector to say, hey, we're going to use AI to sell more pairs of Nike because their stakes are very low. Like we have to really make sure that we do kind of the Boy Scout motto of like, do no harm. And that means today, tomorrow, and for future generations. So I think there's a much stronger burden and level of responsibility on our sector in that case of like evaluating it through a much longer lens.
You just made me wish I had actually invited my husband to this call, because I think what I heard you just say, he's a social psychologist. What I heard you just say is that AI is extraordinarily good at behavioral psychology, nudging people to the next action, but it's not good at installing intrinsic affinity to a mission or a cause. So it doesn't do that.
Right. So I think what's changed, and I think what's really, and you know, Darren was talking about like the future is now. I mean, literally yesterday, the company Future, like they're the most advanced robotics company in the world, paired a robot with OpenAI. And I don't know if you've seen the video, but it was just released yesterday. It is like insane. So like robots now doing things based on just like with all the visual context and everything around there. I think if I was maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, I've been like, okay, well, AI probably can't manipulate people because we were so focused on predictive AI. Predictive AI can just predict things and, you know, and not take any action. But when you now have like in this robotics kind of version, but like generative AI mixed with precision AI and predictive AI, all of a sudden it actually can understand you individually precisely as an individual and what you might likely do. With generative AI can actually take action on that. So, you know, the dumbest AI will ever be is today. That's obviously very cliche. It's very true. But these are not things that are measured in like years or like quarters. They're measured like advances in AI happen exponentially because the technology is training the technology. Very different than the internet. Internet today still operates in pretty much exactly the same way it operated in 1994. I mean, there's like different like cool techniques around it, but it functionally operates exactly the same. AI is so different. And I think right now, you know, being able to take action on your personal data, there's a lot of reason to say, like, let's be very mindful of how we're pairing generative AI with predictive AI to not manipulate people, to keep human in the loop and keep human center, and use AI to free up human time so that I can spend more time with you face to face. That's the best use case of it. But the lure of like more and the lure of like faster is very real, especially for nonprofits that don't have the resources that they would like to have. So like we have these two, we're really at this inflection point. It's so cliche again, like we're at an inflection point. We have to decide which path do we want, more human-centered philanthropy or more automated philanthropy.
So Darren, and I want to give credit where credit is due. Darren was actually the one who came up with this idea of this webinar, because I think you saw the absence of this conversation in the US, and you have a very global perspective. When I work with Darren, I don't know where he's going to be. It could be Dubai, it could be Spain, it could be London. So I want you to respond to what you just heard Nathan talk about, both directly and also in a global context. What are you seeing?
I completely, exactly agree with what Nathan's saying. Somebody needs to take a stand, and the social good organisations, I do think it is part of their responsibility. It's a shared responsibility along with everyday humans to say, do you know what? We don't have the money to keep buying new laptops or buying new software and subscribing to this and that. What we have now is absolutely fine to do what we need to do. And although the rest of it is really exciting, it's like, go away and do the research and stuff. But actually, we need to focus on the problems that we've got today. And then we need to use this technology more for good. But as humans, we have to demand that, and we need to go to organizations to say that's what we want. We can't allow, we shouldn't pass that responsibility, like Nathan was saying, onto others and say, well, somebody else is looking after that. We have to do that as consumers. We have to do that as leaders of our business. And only if we don't stop, if we stop spending, then people can't continue to invest. That's all it needs. Again, this goes back to the psychology things. Like, if we don't buy it, it can't be made. But if we keep consistently supporting it and buying it, then it, you know, things will start to slow down a little bit.
Well, I want to go back to Nathan and ask you, Nathan. So what Darren, one of the things he pointed out is that we are, because you and I work in businesses that are revenue-focused, revenue-producing focused. And that's the way I think about AI. You know, how to do more. But I don't have any examples that I can bring to mind of it being used to execute a mission. And the closest thing I can think of, and I don't know if they're using AI or if this is just an automation, CoachArt is a nonprofit that matches kids in need with people who will teach them art. Yeah. And that went from a 7-hour process to about a 7-minute process. I don't know if that's through AI, but that's the best example I can come up with.
Yeah, so many great examples. I mean, you know, from, you know, Stop Soldier Suicide, who are essentially mining, you know, data in real time for keywords that are very accurately predicting, you know, times when a soldier may be thinking about suicide and being able to intervene in real time, like literally like saving lives, to, you know, essentially, you know, communicating with whales, like, I mean, advances in deep learning and being able to understand literally like our ability to communicate with animals is actually not something that's like a forever away thing, like crazy, like really cool things to identifying and finding refugees, which was always a very manual in-person go to a camp and interview, you know, hundreds of people, you know, that was super laborious to be able to use basically, you know, GPS and tracking to find, you know, people and match people back with their families. I mean, you don't have to look far now for nonprofits that are, you know, starting to use AI. A lot of these are funded through early grant programs through like the AWS's or Microsoft's or Google's, mm-hmm. because they're a little bit out there. A few foundations are starting to get into this and being like, oh, okay, like Gates Foundation and McGovern Foundation are really getting into like, how do we help advance missions using AI? Because it's just, it's efficiency in a really, you know, big way. I mean, at the global side, I mean, I love this conversation, and Darren, thank you so much for, you know, advancing it. Like, I want to just hang out with you for hours, because we could probably do a lot of damage or maybe solve problems. But I have too become more concerned about the societal implications of this, you know, these types of technology unchecked. I mean, it's a tremendous power for good. But at the same time, where like the IMF released a report a few weeks ago that said, you know, in developed nations, AI will impact, not replace, but impact 60% of all jobs, and subtitle, increase inequity. And, you know, it doesn't take long for people that have that nonprofit orientation to say, well, what is the purpose of the nonprofit sector to begin with? It's to reduce inequity. And, you know, it's kind of like where I'm projecting, and it's kind of a lonely place to be thinking about the future a lot of times in this of like, okay, well, if there's an increase in equity, that inequity will fall on the shoulders of the nonprofit sector, but the nonprofit sector is not armed with the technology that created the inequity to begin with. So how are we going to like survive in that kind of vicious cycle? And I think it's conversations like this that aren't happening nearly enough. I mean, again, it's so much focus on the speed and even deployment of AI and, you know, for nonprofit missions or for fundraising, but that we have to really be, we have to understand and sit with like the gravity of where we're at and the importance of where we're at in context. So I answered a separate question, but I definitely see a lot of potential for good. And I think the stakes have never been higher to use that technology for good.
So I know people like you two sit around and think about this quite a bit. What is the, what could we do to get the right leaders thinking about this? You know, how would we approach that?
Like, I just read a book called The AI Playbook, and it really talks about this idea that like pretty much any AI transformation will fail if the culture of the organization doesn't fully understand the aspect of it from a change management perspective, because 70% of AI transformation, so this thing that we're all going through, has nothing to do with data or models. It has to do with a mind shift and a mindset shift. And I've fortunately worked with hundreds of organizations and AI deployments over the years. And I can tell you every single time those that succeed is because the leadership, and that goes from CDO, but also boards, understand that if we do the same thing and expect a different result, that's the definition of insanity, that we can't do things the same way and expect a different result. It has to start with the leadership to say, look, whether or not you invest in philanthropic R&D, I mean, that's the dream, but you allow your team to take risk and fail quickly and fail fast, you know, that whole thing. So I would say almost entirely, near 100% of organizations will fail in AI transformation if leadership doesn't adopt a new mindset that allows for exploration, and in that failure, which is just not something that most nonprofit leaders are comfortable in their orientation.
Yep. Darren, thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And very often you find leadership in business, they're not open to change. They like the idea of change, but they don't understand it, or they feel they don't need to do it because they're successful. But I definitely believe, and I fully agree with what Nathan was saying in the beginning, that, you know, this new wave of technology is not just talking about the future, it's here now, and it is making rapid changes. So if you're a leader or somebody of influence in a business, and you're just sitting there thinking, well, I'll get round to that, we'll just pop that on the agenda for the next time, or I'll just leave it, well, then that's become, I suppose, maybe the beginning of the end of your organization. I was speaking to a global business, and I was really surprised by one of the comments. And the first thing he said, well, everybody knows about AI. We don't need to like to go over that. We've kind of had that bit of training already. That's for sure one of the danger signs. Like, if you hear that, or anybody say that, we know about this, we don't need to do that again. It's like, you may know about it, but what about the rest of your team? What about the rest of your organization? And particularly for an organization of that size, where they had multiple offices in different countries around the world, that's such a sweeping statement. So sweeping statements are generally bad. So I think that standing up for saying that you need training in your organization or a different part of the organization, or referencing your competitors or seeing opportunities out there, I think are really some good ways of understanding like what you can be doing in the organization. Then I think that on another side, when you back your question about how we can like influence leaders, that I think that when it comes to things like sort of political elections, and that we need to get out there and we need to be talking about technology, and we need to be saying, have we got the right levels of education for our kids and for people of a certain age? You know, when we think about the internet, most of us, like these silver surfers, have just got used to the iPads and got used to like Facebook and stuff, and now we're giving them like AI to get used to. So like, how are we protecting society? How are we going to be helping them get used to that? So those are a couple of ways that I think we can move things forward for sure.
So if I were counseling an executive leadership team about their strategic planning, as an example, and you know, we'll take it with a grain of salt, because to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. How important is this conversation to have in the context of strategic planning for an example, 3-year strategic plan? Like on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being you've got to have this conversation. Where are we?
Number 1 for sure. Absolutely. Be there. Yeah, absolutely. You should be there. And I'll quickly jump in, and then I'm going to give this to Nathan because he can talk a bit more about this. But I think that just to go back to the last question and link into this question, one of the big things that I'm kind of big on, and it links with a question that Nathan gave earlier, is that, you know, A, you could have a technology champion within your organization for sure, even just the very smallest of organizations, even the people of the 3 or 4 or 5, up to 500 or 1,000 more, have a team or one person responsible just to look out for this technology and get them to bring back about, you know, what they think is good, what's exciting, the possibilities. That gives you some kind of idea or context about how it can be like used in your organization. If you give that as somebody as part of their, you know, somebody who likes that type of a role, that's something exciting for them, gives them empowerment, but also then helps move the organization forward to having a conversation. And the second way is that to have like the framework embedded in the organization, just start getting a group together, or if you're in a much larger organization, get a board together that are responsible for the use of technology and AI in your organization. And on that group, there should be a mix of different backgrounds. So people from an academic background, people from maybe a legal background, depending on what your business is and how it's made up, have some independent people that don't make everyday business decisions, because that group will come up with recommendations for your organization or for the organization that you work in that may well conflict with your everyday business decisions. As the business leader or one of the influencers in your business, and you can look at those recommendations and then discuss about what's appropriate then for your business and then move forward. So I think those are two good takeaways for people listening to this.
Yeah, Nathan, I want you to respond, but I want to affirm you in one way, Darren. I was speaking with Debbie Brooks, the CEO of the Parkinson's Foundation, and on their board, they have no experts on Parkinson's, because they found that when they put an expert in the room, everybody else deferred and wouldn't say anything. And you know, they've had tremendous growth. So clearly that part is working. Nathan, respond to Darren.
Yeah, I mean, to your question of like how imperative it is for, say, a 3-year strategic plan to include something about AI transformation, I think Darren's points are just spot on. I mean, really solid, you know, perspectives on change management. I mean, McKinsey calls this the multi-trillion-dollar change management opportunity. I mean, they created an entire new division at McKinsey based on AI, which is called Quantum Black. I mean, they just really understand the importance of that. You know, Darren mentioned the digital divide earlier. I mean, the digital divide is going to grow exponentially, because we're not talking about regular technology, we're talking about exponential technology. Exponential technology means that the technology is actually training itself and growing faster. So the growth and adoption of AI is not measured in months or quarters, it's measured in cycles and like retraining cycles. So like a year goes by, that's not 12 months, that's 365 training cycles that a machine learning model will get better and better at. And so if you're not thinking about this in a very, very concerted way for the next 3 to 5 years, and at the very least do what Darren shared, is like baby steps of like, you know, all the standard change management practice of like, you know, find out who your key stakeholder, identify your issue first, identify key stakeholders that are diverse that can come together and at least tackle these. I 100% believe that if in 3 years that you're not making progress in this area, you will cease to exist. I mean, it's not that AI will replace fundraisers, but fundraisers who use AI will replace those that don't. It's the same true for organizations.
Got it.
you know, at some point you will lose so much ground. I mean, there is a pro football game being played and AI is being used in every single, you know, setting that we know about. And the nonprofit sector showing up at halftime with ice skates. And we are just not even, we're like probably not even in the right parking lot. And so this is the time to double down. I think it has to come through people like you that frankly, in consulting firms that understand what it means to actually change mindset within organizations, because tech providers are not that. Tech providers are just, they're singularly focused on like, we have a tool and a solution, you should buy it. The wraparound services, I think, is just a massive opportunity right now to help organizations wrestle with that tension. And the tension, they feel the tension. There's tons of FOMO that's creating that tension of like, yep, the world has changed. I don't understand the change. Help me navigate through that change.
Yeah,
nothing to do with data or models. So I can't say it enough that organizations really have to open their mind that the world will never be the same, and that there's no future where they compete successfully without it.
Okay, I want to ask a question about risk again, and you know, drawing on my superpower of asking stupid questions. So back in the days of predictive analytics, the big fear was that the prediction would be based on the data set, and the data set, to generalize grossly, success equal to middle-aged white guy. Mm-hmm. That's the answer, you know, in terms of who will be successful, who should we hire, what should this look like? That was the answer, you know. The premise being that the answer is based on the data set, and the data set is skewed by bias and data collection. Is that made worse by AI or better?
I can answer two. It will be made worse in some cases and better in some cases. So predictive AI and generative AI are very, very different in this. Mm-hmm. And frankly, predictive AI is much more transparent, mm-hmm, in your ability to look at the math behind an algorithm and why it's doing things it's doing. It absolutely requires human intervention to essentially understand and remove bias. Computer, like, you know, with supervised learning aspect, which means that there's a person in the loop, that has to be shared accountability. But, you know, I went from predictive analytics, from regression, you know, type analytics in the past, which on average use less than 24 data points, because the more data points you use in a regression model, the worse the performance of the model. Actually, they degrade with more data. And because of that, there is tremendous amount of inherent bias in regression models. Because if I'm going to categorize you with 18 data points, but you as a human are much more complicated than 18 data points, you have 1,000 data points. So in some ways, machine learning, deep learning removes a tremendous amount of bias by allowing to use all the data that represents you. With that said, it can't be used on its own. It can't be used as in the private sector, they use unsupervised learning for certain projects where like a computer just is coming up with its own assumptions. Not a good idea, obviously. So we've seen predictive AI remove tremendous amounts of bias by allowing more data to represent a human being versus just 18 data points. So with that, still human in the loop. Generative AI, probably Darren could talk about it. It's a whole different wild west and beast of like, we frankly, even the people who build it don't really understand a lot of the reasons why it comes up with something and why you talk to it nicely and it gives you a different answer than if you talk to it meanly and things like that.
Interesting. Darren, same question. Risk of building the answer on the old data set.
I completely agree. I think it some will get better, some will get worse. In some respects, that I think the AI because there is no such thing as that AI, but AI as a whole new technology, it will uncover perhaps new data, the things that we didn't know, or just build upon that. Like we've kind of talked about behaviors today and building more upon intent. So I think we'll start to see perhaps more deeper patterns about understanding like how we work as people. To give an example, in the medical field, things like about viruses and things like cancer and stuff like that. So understanding those types of, you know, we talk about data, you know, sometimes we might just think about things like social media and marketing and stuff like that. But, you know, where else it is being used at the moment, it is being like used for good. It's not all bad. So in terms of the type of data that is going to uncover, I think there'll be some really new, exciting stuff. And there's already lots of research out there which talks about that. But I think there'll be a lot more to come. And Dara mentioned things like quantum computing, which is infinite computing power That maybe we'll have to talk about that on another podcast, but you know, that's not that far away, you know, where, you know, quantum computing is, it's significantly even more computing power, but that completely will revolutionize things again. But the difference in terms of, you know, that might, people might thought, well, quantum computing might be like 2040, but now it's been talked about as being like early 2030. So we're talking what, 5 years away? That then if you put that with the technology we've got today, with, you know, ChatGPT and all these other services, we're looking at a completely different world that we're living in. We're not living in the same world at all. There's a lot of changes ahead. It goes back to, like, you need to get onto the treadmill about kind of what's going on, what AI is, understanding the real basics, how it can really help us, have those conversations, and then about selectively using it and putting some safeguards in place.
You've been very generous with your expertise and your time. Tell us, what is your very quickly, what is your favorite situation client-wise to get dropped into? Nathan, what kind of situation is like, yeah, this is going to be fun. Here we go.
Yeah, too much data, you know, analysis paralysis. And that's where AI sheds light on all that.
Okay. And Darren, what's your favorite situation to be dropped into?
Gosh, I need help. And then like, okay, what do you need help with? And let's start from the basics. Let's get you like, okay, let's see what we can do. So I think that there's nothing wrong with just saying like, I have no clue what to be doing here. And like, this is all going a bit wrong. It's like, I need somebody to help. And it's like, right, okay, that's my specialty. I'll sit there and help with you.
Love it. And my answer is the same thing, but with the humans, like human interactions. Change management is a nice word for, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? Change starts with just one person, you. If today's episode got your gears turning, don't forget to share it with your network. And hey, why not drop us a review? Your review helps more people find us and spread the good. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, this is Katrina signing off from Seeding Social Good podcast by Turnkey. Stay inspired, keep making waves, and let's create a better world together.